Governor Chris Christie's re-election campaign is asking permission to exceed New Jersey's election spending cap to pay lawyers handling subpoenas issued in an investigation of a political payback scandal. The campaign says it spent all but $13,000 of the $12.2 million limit for Christie's re-election last year. It says that if the campaign can't raise and spend more, it cannot pay its lawyers. And without paying the lawyers, it won't be able to answer the subpoenas. The New Jersey Election Law Enforcement Commission has set a hearing for February 11th.
A battlefield survey has found that decreased role for soldiers in Afghanistan leads to higher morale and fewer mental health issues. A report released today by the U.S. Army says that rates of depression, acute stress, and suicidal tendencies were lower in 2013 than they were in 2010 and 2012. In Alabama, former Lieutenant Governor Jim Folsom Jr. says he's not planning to run for Lieutenant Governor, even though he filed paperwork creating a campaign committee for this year's race. Folsom said today the filing on Friday was required by Alabama's new campaign finance law because he left a small balance from his 2010 campaign. Kind of an odd quirk of the law to get out of that system there from having excess funds from a few years ago.
Benjamin Flax is a UA senior. He is researching UA's ties to slavery as a part of an independent research project supervised by Dr. Joshua Rothman. We'll be speaking to him in just a few minutes after this short break. Stay with us here on Capstone News Now.
Capstone News. And welcome back to Capstone News Now here on 90.7 The Capstone. With all the news that matters to you, I'm Everett Secor. In the studio with me is Taylor Ray and Rich Robinson. Benjamin Flax is a UA senior. He's researching UA's ties to slavery as part of an independent research project supervised by Dr. Joshua Rothman. And he's on the phone now with us. Benjamin, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing today?
I'm doing just great. Would you mind just giving us a little bit of info about what your research is and how it relates to your studies here at UA?
Well, my research in this project is focused on examining how slavery was used on the university campus from its inception in 1818 all the way through the end of the Civil War in 1865 when the campus was burned down.
So, Benjamin, what kind of stuff have you found? Obviously, a lot of students know, or I'm sure some don't, although it's been reported quite heavily in campus media, that a lot of buildings, for example, like Knott Hall is named after eugenicists, and a lot of other, the Ferguson Center is named after a gentleman who's not exactly a progressive, who's not exactly a progressive person. So what type of things have you found so far?
Well, what the research is focused on is looking at old university archives, in particular ordinances and resolutions from the Board of Trustees, as well as pay stubs and slave bills for purchasing slaves by the university, and it deals with a lot of individuals that, yes, the buildings on this campus are named after, such as Somerville Hall, or Manley and Woods. However, there are also other individuals, such as Professor F.A.P. Barnard, who later in his life renounced slavery and actually moved up to New York, became president of Columbia, and then founded Barnard College. It's kind of looking at that type of history, looking at the individuals who were on this campus and how the system of slavery was used on this campus, even by individuals who later in life changed their direction and changed their thinking.
What's your personal opinion? We'll talk more about your research in a second, but and I'm interested in it. I just want to know your personal opinion about the university having these buildings named after people. Do you think it makes sense to change the names? Let's talk about Knott Hall, a well-known eugenicist and, you know, somebody who was tied to a lot of terrible programs and things like that. Do you think that these names should be changed?
I mean, by saying something like that would also be saying that Jefferson College should be renamed because, you know, Thomas Jefferson supported slavery, or that Washington, D.C. should get a new name because George Washington owned slaves. The idea behind it is, yes, there are negative sides to individuals and to their research. However, certain pieces do bring them to a level of light and a level of importance that make it so their names are remembered. Manley did a lot for this university when he was president, the second president, and that should not be sullied completely by the fact that he owned slaves. When looking at Knott Hall, yes, he was a eugenicist, but also on top of that, he he did create the first free black clinic in the state of Alabama and treated anyone for any illness with what they needed. It was for his studies, but he did provide that service. And also, his study on yellow fever and malaria is what ended up helping us build the Panama Canal Zone under Teddy Roosevelt. So the thing is, when you look at negative sides of people, yes, they are there, but there are also positive sides which cause for their memories to be put on, their names to be put on sides of buildings to keep their memories alive. I don't think that we should do the apologetics of wiping them away from history, but there should be a way of examining the past and looking at what they have done, good and bad, to let people see the full story.
You've obviously put a lot of thought into this because your research has probably forced you to have some of these uncomfortable conversations within yourself. What do you think? Do you think it's obviously, I'm sure you do think it's important for the South to come to terms with its history. Why do you think that is the case?
It's the idea of moving forward. When there is an element of our past that is being ignored and not being discussed because people feel that it's too long ago to fully talk about, or it's still too faux pas to really bring up, or how do you mention it, how do you word it, the issues with that then come into the sense that a major piece of our history and founding and creation is being ignored. This university was founded with money that was tied in slave trade, built by slaves. That does not mean that this university is horrible because of what it used. What it's saying is that this is a piece of our history that's been ignored, and that we should at least honor the memory of those who gave their lives to the institution of slavery to build this university and create what is now here today, what we all love and use as our foundation for moving on in our lives.
Tell us a little bit more. What is something that you found in your research that absolutely shocked you?
I wouldn't say that anything absolutely shocked me, because I did go in expecting for some very interesting documents and conversations.
Oh, come on, Benjamin. You're telling me there's not one thing that surprised you?
Maybe something that would surprise other students if they were to hear info about this research.
I would really say that when looking at these documents, there's one that was a resolution that had a lot of writing on it, because one of it said it was crossed out in a lot of locations, because one person who wrote it originally stated that they wanted to hire a Negro to work on campus, and it was crossed out saying by a slave. That was one piece that kind of I found very interesting, looking at how the language was changed. But then another piece really is the day-to-day routine. That's been the one that I really like to focus on the most, due to the fact that a lot of people do expect for bricks to have been made by slave labor or fences to have been put up by slave labor. But a lot of people don't really remember what was needed in a campus before plumbing. The idea that there are written notations about slaves servicing the dormitories to remove bedpans, put in new firewood, remove ash, bring water into the university buildings. Those type of routines are ones that people don't realize or think about, because we don't have to worry about a bedpan that needs to be taken out or a fireplace that needs to be cleaned. But those are day-to-day routines that had slaves purchased in order to do them. And that was probably one of the more interesting and important pieces that I like to focus on.
We're speaking to Benjamin Flax. He's a UA senior researching UA's ties to slavery as part of an independent research project supervised by Dr. Joshua Rothman.
Benjamin, what else do you expect to find? Is there any, part of this research that you have yet to touch or cover and you're looking forward to in the future?
Well, it's one of those pieces that, like I said, I'm a UA senior. I'm about to graduate. That does not mean my interest in it is going to end. But what it is saying is that the conversation is now shifting into more people to look into it and discuss it. There is much that I have not looked into, many files and books and letters that I have not read. I do not have a full story, and I'm not claiming that I do. What this is a look into some of the university's past in regards to slavery. And when looking at where I think this should go is realistically looking at other universities in the last 10 years. They have formed internal committees built out of faculty, students, as well as administration, to form a committee and a findings that will explain how slavery was used or in part of that campus. And I really hope that something like that does come in the future of Alabama, because we would be of the first in this region to be doing it. Virginia has just started, and South Carolina is working on one. But as far as in the true SEC, that would be the first for us. And that's something that I really think would be important to continue with.
As a one last question for you here, Benjamin, we're speaking to Benjamin Flax, UA senior, researching UA's ties to slavery as part of an independent research project supervised by the great and friend of the program, Dr. Joshua Rothman. As a budding historian, is it frustrating for you to have all this information that you know you're probably not going to have a chance to go through just because there's just not enough time in the day? Even if you had 100 years to research this stuff, you're not going to be able to go through all of it. Is that frustrating?
I would say that there is a level of frustration, but also a level of interest in understanding that their work is never complete. If I were to be able to go through it all, then there would be no more reason to discuss it or for other people to look into it. The idea of not having it all gone through and knowing that there is more out there is allowing for more individuals to put the work and the effort and the understanding into what is available.
All right, Benjamin, we would like to thank you for coming on our program this afternoon. We really appreciate you sharing this interesting subject with us, and we appreciate how you've presented it. We'll be back after a short break.
February starting out just as rough as January was on Wall Street. Stocks are falling sharply today, with the Dow Jones Industrial Average down more than 300 points. Today's slide follows the Dow's worst January performance since 2009.
Police investigating the death of actors Philip Seymour Hoffman have found close to 50 bags of what is believed to be heroin in his Manhattan apartment. Two law enforcement sources connected to the investigation stated Monday. A number of used syringes, prescription drugs, and empty bags that authorities suspect used to hold heroin were also found in the apartment where Hoffman, 46, was found dead Sunday of an apparent drug overdose on the bathroom floor with a syringe in his left arm, the sources said. The New York Medical Examiner's Office is conducting an autopsy, according to law enforcement sources. While the Super Bowl didn't break viewer records, but for the first time one record was broken, more than half of all commercials aired during the big game included a social media hashtag. From Chevy's hashtag Silverado Strong to Coke's hashtag America is Beautiful, 50% of the ads featured hashtags, those searchable terms that have spread from Twitter to Instagram, Facebook, and other platforms. That's up from 50% last year and 7% the year before. A remarkable ascent considering that Audi made news just 3 years ago when it became the first Super Bowl advertiser to push to Twitter.
You can follow us on Twitter at Capstone News Now or tweet at us using the hashtag Capstone News Now. We'll be back tomorrow from 3:30 to 5 o'clock with more of the news that matters to you. This is Capstone News Now.
Capstone News Now, bringing you all the news from campus and around the world. Listen every Monday through Thursday from 4 to 5 p.m. All the news that matters to you on 90.7 The Capstone.